Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Ozzie Sawicki, Chief de Mission for the Canadian Paralympic Committee. So tell me a little bit about some recent happenings with the Paralympic Committee.
Essentially, everything is focused right now on preparations for Sochi for the Paralympic Winter Games, which run from the 7th to the 16th of March. And we just completed our final team announcement with the Paranordic and Biathlon teams. So now all five of our sports are announced, and we have an idea of who's going to be competing at those games.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how do the Paralympics compare to the Olympics?
Essentially, it is the term Paralympic literally means parallel games. So the way the games run format-wise is the opening ceremonies are exactly 1 month to the day after the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, and they're focused on events around athletes with a physical disability. So in the case of the Paralympic Games, the events include alpine skiing, curling, sledge hockey, paranordic and biathlon, and a new sport that's entering this game is para snowboard.
So, is there any modified equipment used for these athletes?
It depends very much on the disability. So generally, you're working within the framework of the same equipment that able-bodied athletes are using, and then that gets adjusted depending on whether you are a visually impaired athlete, which is typically the same equipment. The visually impaired athletes are working with a guide in those instances that are leading them down the hill through voice communication. In terms of sitting athletes or wheelchair athletes, they'll have adaptive equipment that is, in the case of skiing, in the case of hockey, they're in a sled for the course of the game. So the adjustments are very much equipment-based relative to the nature of the ability. And in the case of athletes who are playing amateur, or in the leg amateur channel, utilize what would be a leg. In some instances, the athletes will just be on one ski, for example, with outrigger which are crutches with skis on the end of them that allow them some balance capacity.
So, in your time with the committee, what sorts of challenges have you seen in preparing for the games themselves?
Honestly, the challenges are very similar to what the Olympic group worked towards. In these games specifically, it's often the logistics challenges of what are the transportation issues. From a disability component, what are the accessibility considerations around transportation and the logistics of the athlete villages? Is access utilizing a wheelchair available to those athletes? And that's, over the last 15 years especially, that's evolved to where there's a real recognition of accessibility needs, and that's very much built into the planning of the game sites and games villages very well. Other than that, it's often things like with Sochi and Russia, we're both on the Olympic and Paralympic side facing language issues of being able to understand the people that we're working with, the volunteers that we're working with. So it's very much a logistical exercise first, dealing with culture and language, and then focusing in on the sport itself.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the committee, what's been the greatest success moment that you've witnessed?
I think the greatest success moment for Canada is especially in having the home games in Vancouver was a fantastic opportunity for Canadians to really become that much more aware of what Paralympic sport is and the level of quality of competition that's available in Paralympic sport at an elite level. And we're seeing that with those kinds of moments, such as Vancouver, London, as a summer game had excellent exposure, that more and more young people and newly disabled individuals are starting to be aware that there's a number of sport opportunities that are available to them. So from a life-changing process for somebody with a newly acquired disability or somebody with a congenital disability whose parents may be looking at what can my child do in terms of sport, it's much easier for people to start finding out what those sport options are, and we're becoming much better in terms of quality of instruction and coaching that's available, programs that are available across Canada. So I think the real big moments that we see from a Paralympic Games point of view are the medals and the promotion of our elite athletes and our sort of our superstars become our role models and our spokespeople that allow younger people to get engaged in sport and physical activity with a disability.
So, can you tell me a little about the training process?
Training process is similar to, again, to the able-bodied context in that it's very sport-specific. At the Paralympic level or the elite level of sport, it's definitely a process that builds over a series of years. There's a planning and preparation piece as to working on the technical nuances of the sport and developing the tactical knowledge and awareness of the sport. We're very strong now in Canada, beyond the coaching element of having a really strong integrated support piece. So everything from strength and conditioning support, sports psychology support, nutrition quality, and so on, so that we're creating a more holistic athlete that's building towards the competition environment that they're in. And for the majority of these sports, they operate a World Cup and a developmental circuit over the course of every year. And Paralympic Games and World Championships are sort of peak moments in their quadrennial cycle. But generally, they're competitive year-round in both the training and competition setting.
So will anything be unique with this Paralympic Games as opposed to previous years?
The biggest thing I see is that with Vancouver as a home games in London, we were dealing with audiences that were fairly aware of Paralympic sport, with England being the birthplace of the Paralympic Games, essentially. There was definitely an understanding of the nature of para-athletes, whereas with Russia, we see it as very much an education opportunity to educate a lot of people about the nature of disability sport, the opportunities that people can have in it. So it's definitely an information games, trying to ensure that people really understand the information behind what's happening in these events. So a lot of communication, a lot of opportunities to present media to people as to who the athletes are, the nature of the disabilities that they're dealing with, and how they're incorporating sport as a big piece of their life relative to their disability management.
So, if you could send any one message about the Paralympics, what might it be?
The biggest message is that it offers an opportunity to create inclusion and integration of individuals with disabilities into mainstream sport, and it allows any Canadian to really have access to the ability to be healthy and lead a healthy lifestyle through sport. And it really builds it builds an opportunity in people's lives to really focus on leadership abilities, community, sense of community, being part of a team, part of an environment. It's very much the mainstream sport messaging, but creating it as an inclusive environment that includes any type of disability. And I think that's a key piece is that opportunity for anybody with a disability to be part of the mainstream sport world.
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Certainly. Thank you very much.
The Paralympics, one of the most recognized events in all of disability life. But it shouldn't be just once in a while we give these fine athletes this sort of recognition. It should be taken into consideration whenever anyone puts together a sports page, for example. These athletes are out there, they're doing their game every night of the week, in many cases. If not, they're training. These athletes push themselves just as hard, if not harder, than their able-bodied counterparts. The fact is, they don't seem to get nearly enough recognition, in my opinion. When they're out there doing their game, it's a very freeing experience. It's not about what could hold them back. It's about camaraderie, teamwork, and athletics. Just spending time doing the thing that they love to do. And that is an experience anyone can enjoy. Just doing what comes naturally, doing what you want to do in life. For a person with a disability, it's no different. Push themselves to reach the greatest competition possible in terms of their sport. When they get there, they have a chance to prove that they're strong, capable people, not just recognized because of their condition, but recognized because they have the capability to excel athletically. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, and the number 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
For all you artists out there, Leamington is hosting the Leamington Stand Strong Art Competition, centered around its unique history and food. Artists are encouraged to submit 2D or 3D creations that share a positive message about Leamington, a vibrant and unique food-producing community. Submissions must not be later than March 1st at 4 p.m. For more information, or to submit artwork, go to leamingtonstandstrong.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Ozzie Sawicki, Chief de Mission for the Canadian Paralympic Committee. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with David Lipofsky from the Alliance for Ontarians with Disabilities. So tell me about some recent happenings with the AODA.
Well, the biggest news is that we have announced three major areas that people need to be ready for over the next weeks. In terms of our accessibility campaign. The first is that we could have a spring election, and we need to be ready to raise accessibility issues in it. The second is that the government will be soon releasing proposals for comment on improvements to the customer service accessibility standard. People need to be ready to take part in that. And finally, there's an independent review into how the Disabilities Act is going and whether the government's doing a good enough job under it, under the leadership of Dean Mayo Moran of the University of Toronto Faculty of Law, and people need to be ready to give their input into that. So there's lots for people out there interested in accessibility for people with disabilities to take part in. At the same time, we've just revealed today in the Toronto Star that the government not only not been effectively enforcing the Disabilities Act, not only did they know there was rampant non-compliance with it, not only did they have money on hand for enforcing it, but they actually have been sitting on a plan for enforcement that public servants quite properly developed for the government to approve 2 years ago. There's lots that could be done, should be done, but wasn't done.
So, for the campaign you alluded to earlier, for those who aren't as familiar with it, give me some details.
Sure. People with disabilities face barriers, whether it's people with physical disabilities can't get into public buildings or public transit stations or all sorts of other public places, or people with sensory disabilities like me, I'm blind. I might find buildings that don't have rail on the elevator, or bus drivers who won't call our route stops, or people who are deaf who don't have access to sign language interpretation when using public services. We face barriers all the time. They're illegal. The government passed a law in 2005 called the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. It requires the province to become fully accessible by 2025. 9 of those years of the 20 years that were allocated for this are up. We are behind schedule. I lead a coalition called the AOTA Alliance that's trying to get the government back on schedule. We're nonpartisan. People want to learn more about us, they can visit our website, which is www.aodaalliance.org. They can see all of what we're up to. We send email updates out regularly. If you want to get our email updates, just send a request to aodafeedback@gmail.com. That's aodafeedback@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter. Tweet a lot about what's going on the accessibility front here and around the world at AODA Alliance, the Twitter handle, so people can learn all about how to get involved, what they can do, and we rely on people at the grassroots. We're nonpartisan. We don't support or oppose any party in the next provincial election, as in every election since 1995. We ask the parties for accessibility commitments, and we let voters know where the parties stand. Voters make the choices, and we'll work with any government and any opposition party.
So, how do you go about spreading the word to these politicians about the accessibility needs?
What you need to do is sign up for our AODA updates, because we tell you, give you all the tools you need, all the resources you need. So and it's easy to do. People have been doing it all around the province. People who have disabilities, people who don't have disabilities, care about people with disabilities, that really means everybody. People from all political stripes, people from all races and religions and political beliefs, we include everybody out there who may want to raise these issues. And it was this kind of organizing and grassroots pressure that won us this legislation. We had to fight 10 years to get it, 1994 to 2005, and we're fighting like heck to get it effectively implemented.
So, what are the most common barriers that you find in terms of...
I can't really put a label on it because it depends on your disability. Blind folks face websites that are often inaccessible to our screen readers, and lots of people face barriers voting, whether the polling station is accessible or the lack of telephone and internet voting is an accessible option as an alternative to having to go to the polling station and mark your ballot. People face barriers trying to get into restaurants. Sometimes people have one step at the door that'll make it impossible to get in. It really varies, but you can't sort of refer to just one or two that are the most common. It depends on your disability. People with mental health issues face all sorts of issues in the workplace, which undermines a lack of accommodation for people with mental health issues. Has a severe adverse impact on them and on our economy.
So,
and the thing about accessibility is that it's a money maker for everybody. For a business to become accessible, they get more customers, and they get more employees. The employee pool they can draw on is bigger. It's a money maker for us folks with disabilities. A chance for more people to get off the social assistance and become gainfully employed, so that we're paying into the public purse with our income tax rather than collecting from the public purse with social assistance. People with disabilities are disproportionately overrepresented among the unemployed, among those on social assistance, overrepresented among the poor. There are lots of ways to change that.
So, what are the next immediate steps for the Alliance?
Well, our next steps are to be ready to gear up to get commitments from the parties on accessibility for the next election that could well be happening this spring. Get people ready to raise issues around the province as we have in several elections over the past year and by-elections, and to keep the pressure on in the meantime about the major problems we're getting the law enforced and getting the government to move effectively on implementing it, the legislation, and also, as I mentioned, those other priorities, getting people ready for giving input to the Mayo-Moran independent review of the legislation that's taking place right now, and getting people to give input on how to strengthen the customer service accessibility standards. So those are among our major priorities right now.
So if you could send any one message to these politicians about what you'd like to see done, what might it be?
We got to get back on schedule. We're not on schedule for full accessibility by 2025. Right now, we're behind schedule. We need to do take prompt action. We've mapped out some priorities for the government and the opposition party. Last December 3rd, on the International Day for People with Disabilities, we listed 9 priorities that would help get us back on schedule. They could be done within the current budget for the province. We say that they would make the province a better place for everybody.
So, in your time with the AODA, what would you say is the biggest success that the Alliance has achieved?
Well, I think that we have, both through the winning the enactment of the legislation, our predecessor coalition, and then now as the AODA Alliance fighting to get it effectively implemented, we've really put accessibility for people with disabilities on the agenda of the province and municipal level and various levels. Even though we're not moving anywhere near as fast as we need to or should or could, we're certainly moving faster than we would have without. Canada's still lagging behind international trends on accessibility, but we are in a position to catch up. And I think that so there's two successes. I think one is putting us on the agenda, and second is being able to deliver to government and opposition parties, the business community, and municipalities, an agenda of how to get there. Not just a matter of raising people's willingness to do things or attention, but also being able to give them a doable agenda of how to get it done. I'm proud of our grassroots folks for doing a good job of coming up with that and bringing it forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thanks so much. And again, if people want to learn more about us, go to our website, which is aodaalliance.org, or send us an email to sign up for our updates, aodafeedback@gmail.com. Thanks so much.
Of course.
Bye-bye.
David had exactly the right idea in terms of what needs to happen for individuals with disabilities. Doesn't matter who the leaders are, in so much as they should all recognize that individuals with disabilities are part of the community. They need to have a chance to contribute, just to have opportunities to learn, to work, to reach their full potential. If not, it's the same thing as saying, we know there are people out there who could increase and improve the labor force. We're not going to do anything about that. We're just going to let things continue status quo. Not hoping for any change. Not hoping to embrace diversity. And that's something that can't be allowed, folks. But it's an organization like this working at a very grassroots level, but taking the time, taking the effort to make sure there are better opportunities for individuals with disabilities. You might say to yourself, having things fully accessible by 2025, that's a plan that'll fall through. It's a long time away. But it's up to us as a society to make sure that it doesn't. It's groups like this that are saying to the politicians, we're here, we remember your promise, and this is what needs to be done. It may take some time, it may take some cooperation, but building for the future is something that affects us all. Truly a grassroots organization is never to be underestimated. Maybe it comes down to a few people in each community, but a few people working together, taking the right steps, can make all the difference. As we build these policies and procedures, and more accessible future today. The generations of individuals with disabilities yet to be might just look back and say, they recognized that we as a society can do better. And they took the steps to come through on this. It's very difficult for a politician to prioritize everything, that's true. However, disabilities should be on the upper tier of what's important, and what's recognized as important. So much as David did make a point that for these businesses, they're cutting off their own client base if they're not being prepared for individuals with disabilities to come in, make use of their business. It's not just a matter of doing what's right. It's a matter of economics and of simple logic. Someday, someone with a disability is going to want to walk through your door, make use of your business. Are you going to be ready? Is the question that these businesses must ask themselves. And politicians must ask themselves, are these really the right steps? Steps that will be not only what makes the policies possible, but will they be properly monitored? Will they be properly enforced? That is also a key step. Having a plan is fine, as long as you don't let it fall by the wayside. When it comes to disability life, the key word is community. Years ago, for individuals with disabilities who didn't have the specific information about any given condition, it could be extremely difficult to get. However, these days, these individuals can share ideas, insights, resources, coming together through social networks, through grassroots work. All sorts of options exist these days. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the number 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Another key aspect in disability life is the need to reevaluate. Say to ourselves, this policy, this adaptation was good enough. However, technology, understanding, these things have improved. So, is there anything we can do to take this practice to the next level? Take the next step. To keep moving forward, to make things better and better for individuals with disabilities. That's what it's all about. It's not just resting on our laurels and saying, we've done this and it's good enough. A lot of times, a disability group will say they want to work themselves out of existence. Well, many of us would go from A to B without question. But sometimes it's about the interim steps, about improving this or that, building up to making things the best they possibly can be. Now, we as a society need to constantly ask ourselves, is all being done that can be done? If the answer is no, we need to look to our leaders and say, why aren't you taking this into consideration? Why aren't you taking the right steps? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.